shoot, they score!
Score!
We have put the clock in!
Put the shot, they score!
This week in the NHL.
I felt like I did all the right things to prepare for this game.
We got to be focused all 60 minutes.
This week in the NHL.
The most arrogant team he's ever played against.
Do you think that's more of a personnel issue or more of a
He's dominating like the Jets wanted him to do.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve. Now Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Richard Pollock on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things hockey. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Moving right in, shoot, and he fired it wide. It rimmed around the boards, a race for the puck. Giroux on a two-on-one against Scheifele. Giroux in for the slot there. He got a return pass, shoot, scores! A two-on-one that Scheifele broke up on the centering pass from Giroux. The only problem was it bounced right back to Giroux, who found it in his skates, turned as he approached on top of Pavlik. And wristed it past the goaltender for the game winner. And the Flyers win it 3-2 in overtime here tonight.
With Claude Giroux's overtime winner last night, the Philadelphia Flyers defeat the Winnipeg Jets by a 3-2 margin in what was an entertaining contest between the Jets, obviously not playoff bound, playing the role of spoiler, and the Philadelphia Flyers, who are in a dogfight for their chances to make the Eastern Conference playoffs. Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba, for all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca. Good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Tuesday night. Gentlemen, another entertaining contest by the Winnipeg Jets, sort of been the pattern over the past 3 weeks, give or take that time frame, where the Jets play hard. Obviously, they're not playing for anything aside from pride at this point in time. They play hard. They get the game into overtime despite being down 2 goals early in the second period. They earn that 1 point for overtime, but they fall just short in a contest against the Philadelphia Flyers last night.
Yeah, Drew, welcome back. Thanks for welcoming me back after being away.
Were you away?
Appreciate that.
Were you gone?
In on Saturday.
I just thought you were asleep for the entire time. I thought you missed the show because you were sleeping on Saturday.
Anyways, I appreciate you welcoming me back.
Is that a new shirt, by the way?
That is a new shirt.
Yeah, somebody's been doing some shopping.
Richie.
I got to tell you, doesn't seem like a shirt he would have picked out on his own.
Richie always notices when I have a nice new shirt. You never comment on
That's
anything.
True.
I got a haircut last week.
I noticed, I think I saw a picture of you maybe on Twitter or Instagram, and I thought you were looking, you had a nice haircut, clean shaven. You were looking good.
I always look good, Drew.
I'll tell you what, you don't clean up for me and Richie anymore. That's what I can say. I can say that clearly.
Okay, let's get on to the Jets game before I get in trouble here. You know, you mentioned the score, and it was a pretty disappointing loss considering that it was, 13 seconds away from going to the shootout, Drew? And I thought the Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler, Nikolai Ehlers line was the best line on the ice. The game might not have mattered much, guys, in the standings because the Jets have 6 games left here and they're obviously not going to the playoffs. But I thought that they really responded well after the Flyers took that 2-0 lead because the Flyers go up 2-0 in Philadelphia. They're fighting for their playoff lives with the Detroit Red Wings and a few other teams, the Islanders you could throw in there right now. I thought that the Jets really responded well in that third period. I thought Andrei Pavlik played exceptionally well. You know, he doesn't seem to get a lot of credit these days, and everybody already is penciling Connor Hellebuyck in as the number one goaltender, and that might very well be the case. But I thought Pavlik was great. But I thought Mark Scheifele was terrific. I mean, that goal, we all saw it. The goal that he scored where he steals the puck from Voracek was incredible. And then he makes just a beautiful pass to Blake Wheeler on the game-tying goal. And, in the overtime period, guys, let's be honest. I mean, the coverage wasn't very good. Buff goes for a bit of a skate, and he's caught. And then you have Shane Gostisbehere and Claude Giroux coming back the other way. And Mark Scheifele did an excellent job trying to break up the pass of Shane Gostisbehere. But you have Claude Giroux there, and he's a top scorer in the NHL. And, he's going to hurt you. Actually, over the last 5 seasons, nobody has more points than Claude Giroux. So I thought Philadelphia's skill was on display. But overall, a pretty impressive effort for the Jets, Drew, considering that they don't have much to play for. But they're going to go out there and they're going to compete. And we're going to see that tomorrow night against the Ottawa Senators. So I thought it was a fairly entertaining game, considering that it looked like the Philadelphia Flyers were going to run away with it there in the second.
Ezzy, you mentioned the display of talent shown by Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler and Nikolaj Ehlers last night. And, you know, we've seen that trio play very well since they've sort of been together. Obviously, Ehlers was out with that significant period of time. You know, just I think it's safe to say that most people are going to expect that they're going to be the number one line heading into next year, obviously, for the Winnipeg Jets. And we have a lot of time between now and next season to talk about it. But just from what you've seen so far, and, you know, glimpses here, flashes there, you know, over the past month, you know, is that a number? Are they a bona fide number one line in the NHL, you know, entering into next season? Can they, you know, can you talk about them? And, you know, maybe not in the same breath as the, you know, the Ovechkin-Backstrom line in Washington, but in, you know, it's definitely a no doubt number one line in the NHL.
And the way they're playing right now, they're number one line. Yeah, I mean, they're looking dominant for large stretches of time. So I'm interested to see if Ehlers sticks as a left winger as opposed to a right winger. That's one of the interesting things to me. We know Blake Wheeler is the number one right winger, and Mark Scheifele has ascended right now to a number one role, and he's played very well. So I would feel pretty confident about that if I was the Jets. I think overall top nine, they want to improve a little bit and add a player or two. But I think right now they feel pretty confident about it, and you're playing skill with skill. You hear Paul Maurice talk about that. I think it's important putting skill with skill. You know, Scheifele and Wheeler, I think, pushed each other. I think Wheeler pushes Scheifele to a certain level. And I think Scheifele's skill level pushes Wheeler to play a certain way. And then Ehlers just complements him because he can think the game and he adds speed. So when you have a line there that can skate and also particularly Scheifele shoot, they're very difficult to defend. So yeah, I mean, you probably feel pretty confident about that right now.
And Richie, when you talk about members of the Winnipeg Jets this season who have taken the next step, Mark Scheifele, to me, is the only player that's done that. So you're throwing Jacob Trouba in there, and he hasn't taken that next step. And I'm a big fan of Jacob Trouba's, but he's regressed offensively this year, and I think he's regressed a little bit defensively as well. But when you're talking about Mark Scheifele, who missed 10 or so games earlier in the season, he has turned into a number one center, in my opinion. And I think many people's opinion, if you watch him play, he's now set career highs in goals and points. If he's healthy, he easily gets to 30 goals. He might even get to 35 goals if he plays those extra 10 or 12 games, whatever he missed earlier in the season. And I agree with Rich. I think you're in a situation similar to what Bruce Boudreau has in Anaheim. Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler are your two best offensive players, right? And Nikolaj Ehlers is becoming one of those players. But it's tough to break those guys up. As we know, Rich says that Blake Wheeler, you know, we know is the number one right winger. And that's a given. He's been their number one offensive player, I would say, for three seasons now. And you put Scheifele and Wheeler together, they're magic. I mean, the way they find each other on the ice, the way their skills complement each other, I think it's a given that Scheifele and Wheeler will be on that top line. But to Richie's point, it depends what Paul Maurice wants to do with Nikolaj Ehlers. And then you throw Kyle Connor in there. You know, where does, you know, Marco Dano fit in, for example? Not saying that he's going to be on the first line, but I wouldn't necessarily pencil Ehlers, Scheifele, Wheeler in on the first line, but I would definitely pencil in Scheifele and Wheeler on that first line. But as far as the other lines go, I mean, a lot has to do, guys, with what draft pick the Jets get. I mean, if the Jets get a Patrick Laine or a Puljujarvi or a Tkachuk, there's a chance that one of those guys plays
or a Matthews. Matthews.
or an Austin Matthews, Drew. So, I mean, it's tough to project the lines when this season hasn't even ended, Richie. But I think it's safe to say that Scheifele and Wheeler are the two most dynamic Jets, and those guys are going to be penciled in as the top line.
I mean, we've said it on the show many times, right? It's since the Andrew Ladd trade. The Jets, as they are right now, aren't a playoff team to me.
Entering next year.
Yeah, entering next year right now as the squad is currently constructed. But we also said, you know, they're not too far away. A couple of significant moves, I think, put them into a different position and a significant playoff threat. Does that mean the goaltender, as he alluded to earlier? I think it's solidifying the left side of the defense. I think it's one more top nine guy. So those are significant moves, but they're not blockbuster moves that are necessary. And, I mean, if you look at it from where the situation was when they traded Ladd, you didn't think they'd tank this bad and be in contention for some of the players you just discussed.
And, Richie, you don't want to hype up Kyle Connor too much, and I realize
nobody does that in the city.
We've been doing it
you
a
mean,
lot.
You mean God himself?
Well, I mean, he tore up NCAA hockey, but you don't want to hype him up too much. But there is a possibility, a real possibility, that he does play on one of the top two lines next year. And why is that? Well, because he's that good of an offensive player. And Dylan Larkin's been doing that in Detroit, playing with Henrik Zetterberg on the top line. So it's a possibility. It's also a possibility Kyle Connor plays college hockey again next year. It's also possible Kyle Connor plays on the third or fourth line. I mean, there are a bunch of permutations for the Winnipeg Jets next year, and it's going to be fun over the coming months into the offseason to talk about what the possible lines are for the Jets next year. But I think we could all agree that Paul Maurice is going to have an embarrassment of riches when it comes to his forwards. It's really the defense that is going to need the most work, in my opinion, next year.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about Nile Yakupov. He's demanded a trade out of Edmonton. Where could he end up? You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to NHL This Week with Illegal Curve Hockey. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve. Don't be an Ezzy, always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information about Linden Market Dental Center, visit lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Nile Yakupov, former first overall pick of the Edmonton Oilers, has come public with his trade request out of Edmonton. He made the request before the NHL's trade deadline in the hopes that he'd be playing somewhere else right now. Obviously, that hasn't come to fruition, but by the sounds of it, now that the trade demand is public, you would expect it to be worth monitoring this offseason and into the NHL draft. Our colleague Darren Dreger was on TSN 1260 in Edmonton. Here's his comments on the Nile Yakupov trade demand.
You know, this is a player who was very much on the trade radar leading up to the trade deadline. And, you know, I don't think that he'd have been disappointed at all. In fact, he'd have been welcoming of a fresh start and a new opportunity. It doesn't have to be a negative thing. Sometimes, you know, players just, you know, fizzle with one organization and then they get moved. And, you know, at least for a period of time, you know, there's motivation and you get to see a glimpse of what the player in the future may look like. And then they come back down to earth and so on and so forth. I feel like that's the case with Nile Yakupov. And the tricky part for Peter Chiarelli, as we know, is maximizing whatever the rate of return is. What's the value in Yakupov? It is not going to be first overall pick value, not by a long shot. Is the second round draft pick going to be enough? Does he absolutely need a roster player to make this trade? So there are a number of things that Chiarelli, I'm sure, considered leading up to the deadline, and he'll have to reconsider here as you go into the offseason.
That's Darren Dreger from our sister station, TSN 1260 in Edmonton, and he talks about the return for Nile Yakupov. This is a guy who just 4 years ago was the first overall pick in the 2012 NHL draft. The Oilers are sitting here, you know, another disappointing season for the Edmonton Oilers. Stop me if you've heard me say that before. So now that they know that, you know, he's officially wants out of Edmonton, how can Peter Chiarelli go about getting, you know, value for such a diminished asset, but one who also 4 years ago was thought highly enough to be the first overall pick in the NHL draft?
Richie, I don't know if he's that diminished of an asset. I think he's still at an age where people see the upside of Nile Yakupov. I've said for years now on the show, I'm not a big fan of his. Mm-hmm. I think he has tons of work to do to be an elite player at the NHL level, guys. I watched a little bit of Nile Yakupov last night in the game, Edmonton's game last night, and you watch his skill level, and it's very clear how skilled of a player he is. And then you watch him play on the defensive side of the puck, and he's kind of lackadaisical, and he's still not where he needs to be an everyday productive NHLer. He's got 6 goals this year. He's had a horrendous season, and you mentioned that he's the first overall pick. And I love how everybody always likes to associate, you know, where a player was drafted. But at this point, you're talking about a team that's going to want to acquire a guy who's still got loads of offensive upside. So I think there were probably half a dozen teams at least that were interested in acquiring Nile Yakupov before the trade deadline. And I would believe that there are still that many teams that are wanting to acquire a guy like Nile Yakupov. So I don't know if his trade value has diminished that much. I think this is just coming out publicly, and Peter Chiarelli was trying to move Nile Yakupov. Igor Larionov has been vocal dating back to last year, Richie, about how he wanted Nile Yakupov out of Edmonton.
That's Yakupov's agent, I should say.
Right, and Hall of Famer, obviously. And, right. And you look at the situation in Edmonton, and I think they know the writing's on the wall. Connor McDavid, Jordan Eberle, Taylor Hall, you know, they're going to get a high draft pick. I think they know that Neil Yakupov doesn't really fit into what they're trying to do there in Edmonton. I think he's kind of been viewed as a player who's maybe going to fit in on a third line type of role going forward, and he wants to go to a team that I think values him more. So I think he's going to get traded probably around the draft. And I still think there's going to be a lot of teams that want to acquire him, because if you're a deeper team, like, say, the Washington Capitals or the Chicago Blackhawks, who knows? There are a lot of teams that want a guy like Yakupov. I still think that they're not going to have any shortage of teams that are going to want to acquire him.
I mean, if most of these GMs already knew he was available, because Darren Dreger said there that apparently it appeared to be known that he was available. If every team knew that, or most teams knew that,
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how much it affects his value right now. That's right now and into the summer. Now, if it starts next season, the Oilers are slumping again, it might cause some desperation, and there might be something to the pressure that they face to move him. Clearly, the Oilers are looking for a defenseman, and it's a team from defense-heavy team to an offense-heavy team. Maybe it's a Vatanen and Anaheim for Yakupov. I'm just tossing out names and ideas of trades for a Yakupov.
Let me interrupt you right there. You think that he's still worth on the trade block to get a player, obviously not specifically Sammy Vatanen, but a player of that ilk?
Young, talented defenseman.
So he can still get you back a young, talented defenseman, even though he's had 4 years of really middling NHL success?
I think so. If you skate like that and you can shoot the puck and if you can pace yourself a little bit more and you play with a talented guy, you can move the puck and you're able to get a play in the system with disciplined coaching and the same coaches and a veteran team, more structure, maybe a veteran influence, a Russian veteran influence like a Detroit, like a Datsyuk, for example. It might help. I think there's still value there. I mean, you can't write off this kid. What is this? He's 22 years old, 23 years old.
Yeah, he's 23 years old. Or he'll be 23, rather, later on this year.
You're going to write him off now? I mean, I'm not talking you're training for Hampus Lindholm. I'm not saying you're going to get like a Jacob Trouba. But you're talking about getting, to me, a young top four guy who's developing as well.
I got to be honest. I'm surprised that you think he's still going to, that the other general managers would still, you know, see that much value in him, or think that the Oilers are, you know, have anything but a sort of a desperate situation on their hands.
I know I read that people said he wouldn't have gone that high to some teams. I still see a lot of skill, and I don't know if this is just me, but is this the NHL change if there's not one GM or coach who thinks he can change this guy and make him a 35 goal scorer? There are not enough egos in the 30-man game to have one team give up a player, maybe from a depth position on the back end, to try and reap the benefits. Maybe it has to be, you have to toss in a second or third round pick or something like that to kind of supplement what you're giving up, or, you know, what you're getting in Edmonton's case. Sure, you don't need any more, how many more draft picks you need with all the top picks they've had. But I still think there's value there.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Rich. Someone's going to acquire him. I just don't think that he's that good.
No, that's fair. That's fair. That's 100% fair comment. I disagree. I still think he's a good player. I think he's been thrust into a situation. Has he handled it particularly well? No, based on coming out in the public with these comments here. I don't think that really benefits anybody, because we know they want to trade forwards for defense. It's not a secret. Larionov kind of sometimes handles situations in an odd fashion, but you look at what Yakupov was put into a situation of being the first overall pick. Apparently the scouts didn't even want him. They wanted Ryan Murray.
Right.
So I don't know. He must be aware of that at this point in time. Okay? You're put into a team that doesn't have much on the back end to get a fast player who can move and transition the puck. You're put into a young roster, young locker room that doesn't have very good leadership. You have way more pressure to be a scoring player when you don't score. And there's other things, as he mentions, the flaws to his game. But when you don't score, at the end of the day, you're going to cheat to try and satisfy you know, the contract numbers and expectations. So there's been a lot of turmoil there, too. It's tough. I still think that there's certainly something there that other general managers would be interested in. There's too high of a skill level there that the general managers wouldn't be interested in that, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, and I can't disagree with that, Rich. I think when you look at the skill level, it is probably a 9.5 out of 10. And we've seen a lot of skilled players not have productive NHL careers, right? And I think the debate then becomes, well, what's his upside? Is he going to be a first-line NHLer? Is he going to be a second-liner? Is he going to be a third-liner? Is he a candidate to potentially one day go back to the KHL? What are we looking at here? Mm-hmm. And I think you're right, though, when you talk about how the game has become a fast, skilled mm-hmm. game. Well, who is fast and skilled? Nail Yakupov. You watch Nail Yakupov, and some nights he's the most talented player on the ice. And I'm not being sarcastic. I already mm-hmm. said I'm not a big fan of his. And I was a huge fan of Igor Larionov, unfortunately, so I hope I'm not offending Igor Larionov, even though I doubt he's listening right now. But you look at Yakupov, and for me it's more so the intangibles and his work ethic, the way he plays on the defensive side of the puck. And I haven't seen that. And I agree with Rich. I think there was pressure on him, and the team wasn't very well. Mm-hmm. So I think you got to look at that as well. But somebody's going to trade for him. And there's a possibility that he becomes a 35-goal, 70-point guy maybe one day. There's a possibility that he never scores more than 20 goals in a season. We don't know. He's only 22 years old, right?
Yeah.
But I think it's pretty clear that as soon as this season's over and as soon as the Oilers can trade him, he's gone. I don't think he's ever going to play in Edmonton again after this year.
Well, that'll be something certainly to keep an eye on as we head into the off season. The Oilers, as they are each and every off season, a team in upheaval. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Gord Wilson. He's the Ottawa Senators color analyst on our sister station, TSN 1200. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Shortly after 6:30 in the evening, welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment brought to you by the 44th annual Rady JCC Sports Dinner, featuring keynote speaker and Pro Football Hall of Famer Dan Marino. The dinner is coming up on June the 21st, and will also honor former Chicago Bears player and University of Manitoba Bisons product Israel Adonijé. To purchase tickets, visit RadyJCC.com or call 204-477-7513 for more information.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program Ottawa Senators color analyst Gord Wilson. Gord, good evening and welcome to Winnipeg.
Well, good evening and thank you very much. So nice to be here with warm weather. I can't remember the last time I was in Winnipeg without wearing long underwear, so it's good to be here tonight.
Well, I mean, you're still welcome to wear long underwear. You might be a little bit warm if you were to do that.
It would be tonight, yeah. For sure.
Gord, obviously we brought you on to talk about tomorrow evening's game between the Jets and the Senators, two teams that, unfortunately for each fan base, will not be playoff bound in about 10 days' time, give or take. Mm-hmm. You know, last week, Eugene Melnyk, you know, Senators owner, came out and, you know, was critical, to put it mildly, of the season that the Senators have had. You know, given his history of being sort of a shoot-from-the-cuff owner, a guy who's not afraid to speak his mind, you know, should we be surprised when Eugene Melnyk comes out now and makes inflammatory comments like the ones he made earlier in the week?
Yeah, you know what? I think one thing about Mr. Melnyk is he is the Ottawa Senators' biggest fan. And obviously, when you're a fan and you pay the bills, you're emotionally attached, like so many other fans who either buy tickets or buy jerseys or whatever. You get financially and emotionally invested in the hockey club, and no one is more so than Mr. Melnyk. And so this was a year, or has been a year, where there has been more frustration than jubilation, and it's really a 180-degree turn from where we were at this time last year when the Senators lost 2-1 to Dallas after a 1-1 score with about 2.5 minutes to go in the hockey game. Last year, they would have found a way to win that game. This year, they found a way to lose it, and it was just a crushing blow. They followed that up with a disappointing and almost depressing-like 3-1 loss in Buffalo, of all places, when they desperately needed a victory. There have just been times this year where, as I say, there's been more frustration than jubilation, and when you went through, or when Mr. Melnyk and Ottawa Senator fans went through what they saw last year, the expectations in the offseason were obviously a little bit higher. Make the playoffs without a miraculous run and see what you can do, what kind of damage you can do in postseason play with a more experienced and perhaps better hockey club. Well, none of that happened, unfortunately. And so owner's prerogative, Mr. Melnyk, said some things that were perhaps from the heart, were perhaps just in I'll say, the heat of battle. I think I do know that Eugene Melnyk does have a trust and a faith in his longtime general manager, Brian Murray. And, you know, whatever Brian decides, if there are going to be changes to be made to the hockey club, he will certainly run them by Eugene. But at the same time, those decisions will be made collectively, probably by Brian Murray and Eugene Melnyk.
Gord, the Senators, as you know, announced yesterday that Clark MacArthur and Dion Phaneuf are done for the year, and Ken Warren of the Ottawa Citizen had a really good article about Clark MacArthur and his his struggles with concussions. And if you haven't had a chance to read it, for our listeners, it's definitely a great piece worth reading. Were you surprised to hear that Clark MacArthur was struggling that much with concussions? And is there any concern that Clark MacArthur's career might be over?
There was certainly some concern, without question. Four games into the season, he gets bumped, basically. It was almost an innocuous hit where he went to the ice and his head kind of snapped back, and that was it. Now, he had suffered a concussion previously in training camp, and, of course, back in February of last year, he suffered a serious concussion that kept him out the rest of the season. We all thought, and based on Clark's comments, that he was ready to go in preseason, ready to go for training camp, and he had a good training camp and seemed to be at 100%. And then he had that one bump and or one solid hit in training camp where he did suffer a concussion, and, as the article says, didn't pay too much attention to it, didn't want to really believe that it was as serious as perhaps it was. And so he goes out and he starts the regular season, and then he has almost a minor, as I say, innocuous hit in Columbus that has finished his season. Now, if the Senators were in a playoff run like they were last year, I don't think there's any question Clark would be playing. But based on where this team is in the standings, and it was only a month ago where he said, yeah, I'm ready to go. He failed his baseline test, unfortunately, and needed another couple of weeks. Well, a couple of weeks went by, and while he passed the baseline test, the Senators didn't pass the playoff test. And they found themselves too far on the outside looking in, and as a result, Clark's decision to either come back or not changed at that moment. There was just an unnecessary risk, and he didn't want to take it. The club felt it wasn't necessary to take, and as a result, he shut it down. So disappointing, to say the least. He was a very valuable member to the hockey club in terms of production and in terms of leadership. This is something that this team, and it's a young hockey club, needs a 30-year-old plus player to be able to be there every day. And unfortunately, Clark wasn't there. And I think it had an adverse effect on the team.
Gord, where do you stand on Erik Karlsson, his candidacy for the Norris Trophy? That's been a big discussion in the hockey world, and kind of pitting him against Drew Doughty, although there was some talk kind of Brent Burns putting up big totals like Karlsson, that he should be in the discussion amongst some other players. Do you think you see Karlsson play all the time? Does Karlsson, we know how dynamic he is offensively. Is there more that he can give defensively to become even a better defenseman? Or is the style that he plays such that he needs to be able to play that way to perform at the level that he does?
Well, first of all, I don't think there's any doubt that Karlsson should be in the discussion for the Norris Trophy. Whether he wins it a third time remains to be seen. But if you disclude Karlsson and Brett Burns from the discussion, and clearly think that it's a Drew Doughty win, then I don't think people are doing their homework. You cannot argue with the fact that Erik is going to be a top five scorer in the National Hockey League as a defenseman, and the amount of minutes that he plays. He's playing on a defensively deficient hockey club, and one player cannot define defense for a team. I think that's completely unfair to do. Can he give more? Absolutely. Defensively? Yep, you bet. He certainly can. I'm not going to bat for him here, but I would urge people who are doing the voting not to specifically look at the 28th ranked defense in the NHL as far as goals against are concerned. This team collectively has not played well defensively for a couple of years now. You can make a very, very strong argument that in today's NHL, Erik Karlsson, with the points that he produces and the ability to play defense, can be a hands-down winner for the Norris Trophy. You know, we sort of make the argument on Ottawa Airwaves that if you put him on the Los Angeles Kings, he'd probably still have as many points, if not more, and be regarded as a better defenseman as well, just because of how much structure defensively the LA Kings have compared to what the Ottawa Senators have or don't have in their own end. So don't discount Erik Karlsson for a third Norris Trophy, in my own opinion, anyway.
You're listening to NHL This Week with Legal Curve Hockey. Our guest is Gord Wilson, Ottawa Senators color commentator on TSN 1200. He's also a host on Sens TV. Gord, I wanted to ask you about Mike Hoffman. He's leading the Senators in goals this year. He's got 27 already. He's probably on one of the best contracts in the entire NHL, having been awarded a $2 million salary in arbitration last year. And yet, you know, you hear, you know, what Brian Murray has to say about Mike Hoffman, and you see the relationship between Mike Hoffman and head coach Dave Cameron, and it doesn't seem like the Senators are in any hurry to make Mike Hoffman a long-term member of the team. How would you describe the relationship that Mike Hoffman has with Dave Cameron and with the organization, you know, as a whole?
Well, he's a young player who's like a lot of young players. Obviously, he's a very gifted player with the 54 goals that he scored in the last two seasons, but at the same time, like a lot of many young skilled players, there are warts to his game, and once the warts get sort of shaved down a little bit, I hate to be graphic about it, but there are deficiencies in his game that obviously the club looks at when you're potentially thinking of signing a long-term multi-million-dollar contract with a player. You have to make sure that he's on the path to doing more than just scoring goals. The team has been a top 10 team in the NHL in goals for all season long. It's not been a problem.
We may have just lost Gord there, I think, in the midst of that answer. So we're going to try and get Gord back up on the line. And we thank him for joining us, of course, on the program. He was in the midst of the answer about Mike Hoffman. But it is one of the more interesting cases, I think, in the entire NHL. A guy who, you know, clearly is outplaying his contract. You know, he's got as many regulation goals as of late as a guy like Patrick Kane over the past 12 months. Yet, for whatever reason, the Ottawa Senators organization just doesn't seem that enamored with him, particularly head coach Dave Cameron.
Yeah, and Mike Hoffman has a big payday coming, Drew. As you mentioned, not only is he leading the Ottawa Senators in goals, but he was very good as a rookie last year, paid his dues in the AHL. So if the Senators don't sign him, he's going to be a highly sought-after UFA.
I think we have Gord back on the line. Gord, are you there?
Yeah, sorry, fellas. I haven't moved from my hotel room here in downtown Winnipeg, and I'll tell you what, that was radio gold. That was magic there that was being served up. So anyway, just if I can just finish the thought.
Please.
Off, and the Senators like what they see. There's no question they like this player. I think what they wanted to see was a little bit more production down the stretch. He scored a lot of goals in the first half of the season. He's provided them with the necessary fodder, I think, to say this is a player we probably do want long-term, but how long is long? You know, can it be 3 years? Can it be five? If you're Mike Hoffman's camp, you certainly want a longer term with more money, but I'm not sure if the Senators are quite willing to go that route or not. But then again, I'm just the broadcaster, and the GM makes all those decisions.
Yeah, and Gord, we're glad that we have you back here. We've got a couple questions here for you, and then we'll let you enjoy the Winnipeg nightlife here. We wanted to ask you about Zach Smith, who it was recently announced that he will be the Masterton Trophy nominee for the Ottawa Senators, and I've always thought Zach Smith was a very underrated player, good Saskatchewan boy. He's actually got 21 goals this year. For those who don't watch Zach Smith play that much, why was he the nominee for the Masterton Trophy for the Senators?
Well, unfortunately, when you go through a good season like this and you get nominated for this trophy for dedication and perseverance, it's because the season before you had some struggles, and Zach Smith certainly had his struggles last year. I think he missed almost 40 games with a devastating broken wrist. And one of the things that he was able to do last year was work on his skating and work on, believe it or not, with one hand, puck control, and once his wrist got better, he was able to finish the season with a couple of games and then go into the summer knowing what he had to do, and he worked a lot on his shot. He's always had a pretty good shot that just got a little bit better this year, And it's interesting because he got shifted from center, which is his natural position. He got shifted to left wing. And he had almost an instant chemistry with J.G. Pageot, number 44 for the Senators, who's had a career year, I think has 18 goals so far this season. And then Winnipeg native Mark Stone, who's just followed up last year's Calder Trophy runner-up season with another spectacular year. And so you combine those two cerebral players who think the game and see the game so well with Smith's ability to grind it out and have that improved shot, and that's why he's had the production that he's had. And it's funny because you talk to any one of those three players on Ottawa's so-called first line now, and they'll all say the same thing about the other players. Mark Stone will offer up, well, I'm playing with two great guys who see the ice well and do the dirty work, et cetera, et cetera. And Pageot will say the same thing about his wingers, and Smith will say the same thing about Mark and JG. They just seem to mesh very well, and they've had some continued success, which has been nice to see.
Final question for you, Gordon. Dion Phaneuf was the big acquisition a couple weeks ago, surprising acquisition, and now he's been shut down for the season. But can you talk about how he performed after his acquisition and how you see him fitting into the defensive court next year?
Yeah, and I'll start with how his presence has been in the locker room. He's been a tremendous leader instantly on the hockey team. He's fit right in. He sits back and observes, offers comment when he thinks the comments are right and warranted, and he's helped Erik Karlsson. He's certainly helped a young player like Cody Ceci, who he was paired with immediately, and they again had instant chemistry. He's going to be a fun one to watch. He's been a treat to be around. The players certainly respect him. When he came over from Toronto, remember, Toronto, he was hated by the Ottawa Senators when he was a member of the Leafs. But everybody in this business knows that when there is a trade, it is business. And you go from being hated to loved almost instantly when the trades are made. And Phaneuf was like that. And they realized, the first thing that people said about Dion Phaneuf when describing him was the word respect. He had a tremendous amount of respect for those who play the game and who are in the game. And that goes for the trainers, the support staff in the building. He's just an upbeat individual, and certainly fun to be around and encouraging to be around. So he's fit in nicely, and the Senators, I think, looking forward to having him for the next 5 years.
Gord Wilson is the Ottawa Senators color guy on TSN 1200. You can also see him on Sens TV. Gord, really appreciate your time this evening, and thanks very much for joining us on NHL This Week with Illegal Curve Hockey.
Well, my pleasure. Anytime. I'd be proud of number 61 in Ottawa in the Ottawa Senators uniform tomorrow. Well, Winnipeg's Mark Stone has had just another tremendous year, and he'll be fun to watch tomorrow night.
We're looking forward to it. Thanks again, Gord.
Cheers, boys.
Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL This Week. When we come back, we discuss some more of Rick Westhead's tremendous work regarding the NHL and concussions. Big thanks to Gord Wilson for joining us to talk about the Ottawa Senators ahead of their visit to Winnipeg tomorrow night. This segment of the program is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Isn't it GNR reunion this weekend? Is that why you play this, Chris?
Not necessarily why I played this, but...
A happy coincidence?
It's a happy coincidence.
Yeah? I didn't know that there was a GNR reunion.
I think it's... it's coming up.
I don't know
up.
If it's this week. It's coming up, for sure. They just announced like a... I think it's 12 more dates after their festival.
Like, what are the odds that that actually happens? They don't brawl on stage before the end.
Are they playing Coachella? Is that where they're playing?
They are. Okay. Playing Vegas, too.
Yeah. This is the first band I ever saw.
Huh? Your parents did a nice job. How old were you, Drew?
Well, when did they play here? I would have been either 11, I think.
Oh, that's young for GNR.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen pictures of Axl Rose lately? He looks like he's about 325 pounds.
He has not aged well.
Really, Axel's put on some weight.
He's been eating some steak.
He's also supposed to be the lead singer of AC/DC now, from what I've been reading. He's supposedly going to replace
Brian Johnson.
Lead singer. Yeah, because he's supposed to, medical. He can't sing anymore, or he's going to go deaf if he keeps going to these concerts. So they had to replace him. They chose Axl Rose of all people.
You know, Chris, as far as I'm concerned, if Slash isn't involved, then it's not really
Guns N'
Roses.
Well, that's just it. Slash is involved.
He is. That's the thing. Well, it's a full reunion. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's a full reunion.
I was going to go down to Las Vegas to go see.
Because they hate each other.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. There's no way this lasts. the other aspect of it is Axel. I mean, Coachella will be fine. Everybody will just be having a party. But Axel usually doesn't get on stage until like 4 hours after it's called.
That's like what Slash and Axel. Yeah. It's like Richie and Drew on a legal curve.
TSN's Rick Westhead, TSN.ca's Rick Westhead, doing some more excellent work on the NHL and the lawsuit regarding concussions. And he was on our sister station earlier this week, or earlier today, I believe, discussing the fact that the NHL claims to not have any responsibility with making the game of hockey safer. So here's Rick Westhead, and then I want you guys to talk about the obligation that the NHL has or doesn't have to make hockey safer at all levels.
Well, the lawyers in this case would argue that is that's proof positive right there that the NHL's public messaging amounts to little more than a public relations ploy, because, you know, the NHL publicly certainly doesn't say that. They certainly don't say that we have no interest in making the game of hockey safer at all levels. Of course, all levels includes the NHL. It would also include minor and amateur hockey. And publicly, the message is much different. You know, the NHL produced a concussion awareness video alongside several of its sponsors like Scotiabank and Reebok. The NHL has sent its own medical staff to participate in, you know, medical summits at places like the Mayo Clinic, where they've shared their opinion about research and concussions and making the game safer at all levels. So, you know, publicly they're doing one thing, which, you know, at first blush anyway, reading that email seems to be very different than what they're saying privately behind the scenes.
That's TSN's Rick Westhead. I'm informed he will be on HNL tomorrow afternoon, so you can look forward to more from Rick Westhead tomorrow afternoon. Your thoughts? I don't want to talk about the concussion issue so much, because it's been, you know, there's enough blame to go around from the NHL side, from the NHLPA side. You know, we've discussed it ad nauseum. But your thoughts on the NHL writing in emails that they don't feel any obligation, that they've, quote, never been in the business of making the game of hockey safer on all levels?
Well, first of all, before we get more into the article, I thought actually in this article, one of the best quotes was the shot that he gives to Donald Fehr.
Sure.
About spending a decade in baseball protecting steroid users. I just thought that was kind of funny, actually.
Mm-hmm. Here's the quote.
It's true.
Here's the quote from Gary Bettman you just wrote, you mentioned, as Gary Bettman in these emails that were released as part of the court documents. Quote, the current head of the NHLPA, the current head of the union, spent a decade in baseball protecting steroid users over what was best for the vast majority of his players and the game.
Right.
So, you know, to your
point.
Which
is 100% true.
Absolutely. Donald Fehr was interested in... Yeah, wasn't right. interested in players' health
okay.
in that instance.
Now to these emails here. And, you know, I think Rick Westhead, we've had him on the show before. He's an excellent journalist. Nothing is new here to me in these quotes. And if anybody is surprised by any of the interactions between Bill Daly, Brendan Shanahan, and Gary Bettman, they haven't been really following the NHL guys over the last certainly 5 to 10 years. I mean, the NHL, I think, along with the NHLPA, have taken many steps to reducing concussions in the NHL. And it's one of those complicated issues where it's not as simple as just taking fighting out of the game. I realize that a lot of people that are anti-fighting, I happen to be pro-fighting. I'm not pro-stage fighting. I'm not pro-goons. But I do think that fighting has a place in the game. Read Bobby Smith's article in the Globe and Mail. Bobby Smith, of course, former Montreal Canadian, GM of the Halifax Mooseheads, Drew.
Yeah.
We tried to get him on. Hopefully we can get him on. But the point is, concussions happen. Hockey, we've talked about this for the 7 years that we've been on air here. I mean, hockey is a physical game. Concussions happen. It's about reducing concussions and making sure that you don't put players in a position where they can get a concussion again and they can potentially get brain damage. Now,
but I'm not even talking about concussions because, you know, they happen. I agree with you wholeheartedly. I'm talking about the fact that the NHL does not feel they have an obligation to make the game of hockey safer at all levels.
Well, this is also from 5 years ago.
Well, it doesn't matter. They still wrote it 5 years ago. That if they believed that 5 years ago, I find that to be stunning. That's a position that they would take.
Well, they obviously do care because they've taken many measures to reducing concussions, whether that's the concussion protocol, concussion spotters. Is that enough? Equipment. I mean, they've looked at improving equipment. They've worked with equipment manufacturers. So it's documented that they've taken measures to reduce concussions. The fact that they said this is a little bit concerning. I don't personally believe that they actually mean that. because the NHL and the NHLPA have worked together at all levels to reduce concussions. So to me, it's more so about some of the casual language that they use to me when they're addressing this. I mean, going back to what happened in 2011 with Rick Rippon, Derek Boogaard, and Wade Bielak, horrible tragedies that really the entire hockey world felt.
Sure.
But it wasn't just about fighting. I mean, there was mental illness involved. Yeah. There was drug addiction involved. And these types of things are not things that just popped up in 2011.
No, I'm not even
talking. And fighting in hockey isn't the reason why these tragedies happen.
I'm not even talking about fighting. I'm talking about the safety, the fact that the NHL doesn't feel they have an obligation to make the game of hockey safer at all levels, to be a leading example.
Well, they obviously do because they suspend players
Rich?
That hit other players from behind. So
I think one thing that needs to be, these are private emails.
Yes.
They've been disclosed publicly.
Yes.
Hey, is anybody surprised that discussions in private are different than what comes out in public?
No. I would think not, because, I mean, everybody's got, you know, everybody in their day-to-day lives have different discussions in private.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you're, Drew, if you're saying you're surprised they're taking the position, well, privately they take a position different than they probably, what they're going to do publicly. So, I mean, that speaks to liability and risks and things like that.
Sure.
So I don't know how surprising all of it is, but this is part of this process that these emails came out. In the normal course, you wouldn't see emails exchanged from these parties.
And Richie, this whole, I just want to get in here for a second. And you know, the quote from Michael Cashman, who represents some of the former players involved in that lawsuit, he mentions that the NHL has continued to deny the link between CTE and repeated head trauma and hockey and all this. I mean, he has a legal responsibility to not admit that link because of these ongoing lawsuits. I mean, it's clear that there is the link. I mean, ask anybody who's involved in concussion research, and they'll say that there is a link between the physical nature of hockey and CTE, right? These players, if especially if they have repeated concussions, they can't play hockey anymore. And, I mean, look at Clark MacArthur. He's a perfect example. There's a lot of players, going back to Brett Lindros, who only played a couple years in the NHL.
Go ahead, Rick.
But as far as the NHL not admitting it, Rich, they're not going to admit something when there's a multi-million dollar lawsuit going on.
And I don't know enough about the civil litigation aspects of this, but I guess my very limited knowledge, you wonder if at some point there's going to be some kind of waiver that these players sign in regards to these issues. If hitting is going to be part of the game and the risk is going to be there, if there's something that the NHL tries to cover for themselves. The issue, of course, would be if they're admitting that there is a risk and that would affect all players already in the league.
Something worth monitoring as the concussion lawsuit continues its way through the court system. Let's head to break. When we come back, we discuss Jimmy Vesey. He chooses free agency over the Nashville Predators. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Hour two of NHL This Week on this Tuesday, the 29th of March. Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. This segment is brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at KeenerJerseys.com. I'm reliably informed by my colleagues that it's not Jimmy Vesey, it's Jimmy Vesey. But he has spurned the Nashville Predators. He was a former third-round pick of the Predators. He just finished his college career at Harvard, a loss by the Harvard Crimson. Are they still the Crimson? I don't even know. In the Frozen Four, not the Frozen Four, but the Frozen Four tournament, and that ended his college career. He has chosen to not sign with the Nashville Predators. He's going to go to unrestricted free agency this summer. David Poile, Nashville Predators general manager, spoke with the media when the news became official yesterday. Here's a clip of David Poile talking about this decision.
Every indication was that he was going to sign with us. His dad had told me, had told Peter Laviolette, Scott Nickel, Paul Fenton, that his son was going to sign with us last year. And Jimmy himself told Paul Fenton prior to the trading deadline, which was an important time for us because it was our last opportunity if we were going to change the team. We told him if he was going to sign with us, we were going to keep a position available for him, and he told us that he was going to sign with us.
Technically, Jimmy VC didn't do anything that he's not permitted to do. He's under no obligation 3 years after he was drafted to sign with the Nashville Predators. The manner in which he's handled this, does it leave a sour taste in your mouth the way he's gone about his business in this instance and in his dealings with the Nashville Predators?
Drafted.
Pardon me, 4 years after
he was
drafted.
In the Jacob Trouba year, 2012,
yes.
Neil Yakupov.
Pardon me. Third round pick, 66th overall in 2012,
yeah.
Yes.
I think this is a pretty fascinating scenario for Jimmy Vesey here, and it's unfortunate for David Poile and David Fenton and the Nashville Predators. Pardon me, Paul Fenton, Richie. If you pick up the Hockey News Future Stars Guide, Jimmy Vesey is considered the number one prospect in the Nashville Predators system. This is a guy who was a finalist for the Hobie Baker Award last year. He's a top prospect. So when you talk about Jimmy Vesey, it's not like he's just kind of an average type of player. Nashville thought that they could sign him and that he could play for them in the playoffs this year.
Mm-hmm.
And
a top six role is what they've guaranteed
right,
him,
whether
supposedly.
It's, you know, top six, Drew, or he ends up on the third line. The point is, guys, that they thought, David Poile, that is, just said it. We just played the clip. He thought that Jimmy Vesey was going to play for them. Now, for me, what's interesting about this, first off, Nashville has been lights out in the second half of the season. I mean, they're a really good team. They're a prime contender for an upset here in the first round of the playoffs. The point that needs to be made here, first off, we've seen this many times before. We saw this with Blake Wheeler. We saw this with Justin Schultz. We saw this with Mike Riley, who signed with the Minnesota Wild. We saw this with Kevin Hayes with the New York Rangers. All of these guys played college hockey and then didn't sign with the team that drafted them. So there's a long history of this. So this isn't the first time it's happened, as you mentioned. And there was no loophole here. Chris Peters, who we're having up on at 7:30, wrote about this for CBS Sports. This is not a rare situation, but he's giving up money here. And he could have signed a contract here, and he's essentially leaving money on the table, guys. So it's pretty obvious why he decided not to sign with Nashville. Now he can pick from all of the 29 other teams. Now, we should mention that his dad is a pro scout with the Toronto Maple Leafs, and the link has been made
what a coincidence.
That he's going to be going to the Toronto Maple Leafs. So is that a possibility? Absolutely. But for me,
the Boston Bruins are also talked about as a potential team that he's going to go to, given he's from the Boston area.
I think a lot of teams are going to call his agent.
Well, of course. Did his dad scout before that at all? Do we know that?
I don't believe so. I'm not 100% sure. But when the Leafs hired his dad as a scout, I think it was this past offseason, mm-hmm. or maybe it was two off seasons ago, immediately alarm bells started going off that the only reason he got this job as a scout is so that the Leafs would have a leg up on signing their son.
Well, if you listen to David Poile's audio last night, Chris did a great job on the post game last night. I actually got it from the Nashville station. So he had a hot audio. Is that what they call it? Hot audio?
Sure.
Something like that.
We'll go with that.
You didn't steal it. I mean, you asked for it, and we give credit to the Nashville, the broadcasters down in Nashville. The point is David Poile was he was asked about communicating with Jimmy Vesey's father and said, you know, he was negotiating or talking or dealing with the father, not the scout for another team. Huh. I don't know. I'm pretty sure the father and the scout for the other team are the same person.
They are in the
system.
As
you want to shut off one and up and not allow bias to get in the way, I find that to be a very odd situation.
Is it too much to say that it's scummy?
They drafted his brother, too, by the way.
The Leafs drafted his brother. That's right.
The sixth round, yeah.
Is it too much to say that it's scummy of Jimmy Vesey to not even meet with the Nashville Predators organization?
Well, I mean, scummy is a pretty harsh word, Drew. I think that it is. Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying there. You don't meet with them.
They came to visit him in Boston.
That's one thing. Not meeting with him, I have an issue with. I have a bigger issue is if Paul Fenton said today that he told them he was signing with them on three separate occasions. One's bad enough. Two, but three times. Now you could do the whole fool me, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
Yeah.
Fool me three times. I don't know, but you understand the point. That's an issue, but that does certainly put his character in a very bad light. And does that influence other teams? I don't know. Again, this goes back to the Yakupov teams don't, and I'm not saying he has the same, he has character problems and VC does, the idea that teams think they can do something with a player, they don't really care. I mean, they'll take it into consideration, but they have a will and a ego that they can change that and make it a better situation. So it wasn't handled well. He exercised a contractual right that is his right. He's able to do that and shouldn't be faulted for that in a vacuum.
Right.
But if he handled himself, not meeting, but more so telling them three different times, if that's true, that he was going to sign with them and then didn't, that does not look good.
And we should mention as well, guys, that so August 15th is the deadline to sign him, and other NHL teams cannot contact him or his agent before that.
Uh-huh.
And
you can file the tampering charges already.
Well, I'm just saying those are the rules. And the other thing that's interesting is he could have signed a deal, an entry-level deal with Nashville,
yeah,
which would have burned the first year, and that would have got him closer to restricted free agency. Now he can't do that, which is surprising. So he's really foregoing that, Richie, so that he can pick another team to go to, any team to go to, really, because if that many teams were after Justin Schultz, there's probably going to be a lot of teams after Jimmy Vesey, but it's most likely that Jimmy Vesey has a couple of teams in mind. Toronto is probably one of them, but mm-hmm. It's very interesting because I agree with everything Richie said, and is it scummy? Again, that might be too harsh, but he did tell David Poile and Paul Fenton that he was going to sign. They were kind of factoring him into the playoff plans, and he's decided to kind of pull this at the last second. I think a lot of people, Adam Vingan, who covers them for the Tennessean, who broke the story, he seemed very surprised. A lot of people seemed surprised. It's a tough pill to swallow for Nashville.
If you have David Poile, who's calm for the most part, very measured with his comments. I mean,
remember what happened with Ryan Suter.
Yeah, he's been on this show before, and he's been very honest, and we've appreciated that.
Yep.
But he's very well respected his father, Bud Poile, and the NHL family for years and years.
Well, David Poile's been the general manager now for, what, almost 40 years consecutively?
Well, Washington and in Nashville. So to have him react this way, and I realize the Ryan Suter thing, but have him react this way. He even talked about the Ryan Suter thing and how it was different and that it was financially motivated. Now, I don't even care so much about that. Like, if Jimmy Vesey is not financially benefiting from this, that shouldn't be held against him that he's not taking the money, because if you're going to blame players for taking the money, you can't blame them for not taking the money. What you can blame them for is if they give you their word on a number of occasions and don't follow it up.
Well, that's the part, yes, that jumps out at me, is that he told Paul Fenton, according to Fenton, three times he was going to sign with him. That's why the Predators allegedly didn't make certain moves at the trade deadline, because they were holding a roster spot for him. I mean, I just don't see, why not be honest? Why not come out, if you're not going to sign there, and that's certainly his prerogative. And we'll discuss in a minute whether or not, that should be changed. But if you're not going to sign there, why not just come out and say, I appreciate you guys having drafted me, but I'm going to exercise my option of not, what incentive does he get by really sticking it to the Nashville Predators?
Or just say, I'm not even sure right now. It's better than saying, I'm going to sign with you.
Sure.
I mean, Richie, I agree, by the way. I mean, I think very highly of David Poile, as we all do. The thing for me that is really disappointing, in addition to the fact that Jimmy Vesey told them that he was going to sign when they had 4 years to sign him, but they didn't sign him, for those who are wondering, because he said that he was going to finish his degree. So the plan was always that he would finish his four-year degree, then sign. But the problem is they have an investment in him. The Nashville Predators, it's been documented, worked with him in the offseason to kind of get his training regimen up with diet and workout routine and stuff like that. Scott Nickel, former NHLer, director of player development for the Predators, has worked and spoke with him apparently on a weekly basis. So they have a lot invested in him. And then all of a sudden he says, actually, I'm not going to sign. I think I'm going to go see if I can get a contract with another team in the offseason.
I think he has a pretty good idea of probably where he's going to go. A couple of things on that is the kind of word came out today that if his advisors, his father, whoever it was, his agent or player advisor, I guess, technically not an agent yet, encouraged him not to meet, and they were concerned that he changed his mind when talking to Nashville. So that probably speaks to the bad advice part that you're hearing David Poile say.
Sure. That they wouldn't even...
He's not 18, though.
Yeah, you're 20-something-year-old man. I mean, you're exactly right. You're not 18 years old. You've made significant life decisions to begin with, and this is the way that you treated the Nashville Predators and David Poile. I think it's, it really is an unseemly way of going about his business.
Nashville is a first-class organization dating back to when Barry Trotz mm-hmm. was there. Mm-hmm. David Poile has done an excellent job over the years. Paul Fenton has done an excellent job. I mean, I think if there's one organization that you want to be with, or one of many organizations that have a great reputation, Nashville is one of them.
I think that's a good point, Izzy. It is surprising that you know if it was a lesser thought of organization in a less desirable city, maybe you can sort of understand it a little bit more. But everybody loves Nashville, as we hear ad nauseum, and it's a good organization.
It's weird that it's an American kid with a kind of a high flying attack, pretty offensive group there, and with a lot of skill. Opportunity to play in the top six. I mean, it is odd that he wouldn't, I think David Poile talked about the state tax, so kind of a party town. Like, it's a little bit surprising that wasn't appealing to him.
Richie, you don't want to play with Ryan Johansson and Philip Forsberg?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what he sees from it as. Yeah, it's just, again, he can do that. He can wait it out because he's going to, he can wait out his 4 years. Blake Wheeler did that.
Yeah.
Jason Gregoire Sr. did that. Many players have done it. It's just the manner in which he did it. Which is unflattering.
The double blow for the Nashville Predators is that they don't get any compensation because he was a third round pick. Now they stole a guy in the third round by all from what it seems.
Oh, for sure.
And now they get no compensation whatsoever, for losing him for absolutely nothing. At least coming up on August 15th when he's eligible to sign.
Now, having said all this, I haven't seen the kid play. I don't know how good he is. Well, I mean, we might be overblowing it. The media might be overblowing in terms of the attention it's getting versus his skill level.
Sure.
But as he mentioned, he's the top prospect in Nashville system. So.
You remember Wayne Gretzky. The Oilers had Wayne Gretzky put in a recruiting call to get Justin Schultz on the Oilers team when he was a college mm-hmm. free agent.
That worked out really well.
Yeah, that worked out real well, as right. Quickly, should this be a loophole that the NHL looks to close in the next CBA negotiation?
I don't think so.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, if a guy wants to get drafted, wait until he graduates, wait 4 years, and he's going to put all that time and not get paid and go back in the draft? Go to free agency? If he wants to wait the 4 years, how often that's going to happen?
Well, I mean, it doesn't happen all. There's about half a dozen cases you can sort of think of off the top of your head.
So basically, you want to control where you go. Okay, you have to pay your dues. I don't know. I think I'm fine with it. I just didn't like the way this was handled. I don't mind the rule itself.
Richie, I don't think you can have a situation where teams are allowed to retain the draft rights of a player for an unlimited amount of time. Right now it's 4 years. Could you maybe look at moving it to 5 years? Well, how does that really change anything?
But if the team doesn't want to sign the player, then they don't sign the player. So why shouldn't the player have a right to not sign with the team?
Of course, the rules are different depending on if you're a junior hockey player or if you're a college hockey player or if you play professionally over in Europe.
Right, that's right.
So because if you're a junior hockey player and you don't sign, you go back into the draft.
I'm saying, like, the team has the option of doing that. Why shouldn't the player have the option of waiting out the team?
Fair enough. It's a reasonable comment on your part. Anyways, an unfortunate situation, particularly for those who cheer for the Nashville Predators and the Predators organization. We'll see if Jimmy VC materializes into a bona fide NHLer and where he ends up. It's head to break. When we come back, we're going to look at the results of a National Post player poll on the NHL. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. You're listening to NHL This Week here on TSN 1290. A reminder, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show comes to you this Saturday at our regular 9 a.m. time slot. Fortunately, the Jets don't play at noon anymore this year, so we'll be on at 9 a.m. on every Saturday till the end of the regular season and then going into the playoffs, of course.
Yeah, looking forward to the playoffs, Drew. Some interesting matchups here. We've talked about them all year, but, they're going to be just... For hockey fans to have waited this long of meaningless games mm-hmm. is a long time. It's a long time. It'll be fun for the games in this city, especially, to turn on the TV and have games actually mean something.
Absolutely. Illegal Curve is thrilled to be participating in the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life. Join IC on June the 5th in raising money for the Riverview Health Center's Alzheimer's and Dementia Wards by cycling in the event or contributing to Team Illegal Curve. For more information about the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life or to join Team Illegal Curve, visit rhcf.mb.ca. Send us a tweet at Illegal Curve and we'll give you all the relevant information. Gentlemen, an interesting article, an interesting player poll in the National Post. Cam Cole of the Vancouver Sun writes about it as well. And the question was asked to players throughout the league. Of course, they were promised anonymity. Who is the most overrated player in the NHL? And for the second year in a row, the winner is Phil Kessel of the Pittsburgh Penguins with 29% of the vote. You surprised that he got 29%? Dion Phaneuf came second. Last year they tied. Dion Phaneuf came second with 11% each. Surprised that Phaneuf, or that Kessel rather, is the runaway winner with this award?
I kind of mailed that he's in, no? Like, are those guys overrated still? Like, aren't they
properly
haven't we
rated?
Determined what they are? Yeah, like... You know, Phil Kessel is going to be what he's going to be. He's going to be a goal scorer and
nothing else.
Yeah, that's what he is. Dion Phaneuf, his decision making is questions. His skating is to me is taking a step back. But I mean, they're still useful, productive NHL players. They're better than average NHL players.
Sure.
So I'm not so sure that they are still overrated. I wonder if the players mailed those in a little bit there.
I think it's a fun article, but I personally find these articles completely useless. Phil Kessel is
tell Cam Cole how you really feel, Leslie.
Phil, nothing against Cam Cole. He's an excellent journalist, but first off, it's hilarious that he calls Phil Kessel the little ball of cotton. There were votes, and not only were there votes, second was P.K. Subban. Well, first of all, P.K. Subban is one of the best defensemen in the NHL.
Yeah, P.K. Subban tied with Dion Phaneuf with 11% of the vote most overrated.
But also getting... significant votes were Patrick Kane, Jonathan Taves, Crosby. I mean, you're talking about some of the best players. So it's pretty funny, though, when you talk about Phil Kessel, like, he's overrated based on what? Pittsburgh goes out and acquires Phil Kessel to increase their scoring. Nobody thought Phil Kessel was going to score 50 goals. What does he have, 24 goals right now? That's probably exactly where you thought, at least I thought Phil Kessel was probably going to be around 25 goals, 50 points. I don't think he's ever going to duplicate that career year that he had in Toronto. So that doesn't surprise me very much. But when I see that P.K. Subban is overrated, he's one of the best players in the NHL.
It is interesting, as you pointed out, it is interesting that how many top-end players are on the most overrated list.
No, you guys are reading the fans' most overrated list there. The players had Phil Kessel and P.K. Subban. Yeah, the fans, for some reason, I think, obviously, for fandom purposes, have Taves, Crosby, and Ovechkin and Carlson as overrated there. If you look at the dirtiest player, according to the players, Zach Rinaldo of the Boston Bruins won by a snout, that's quoting Cam Cole, over fellow rat Brad Marchand for the dirtiest player, according to other players in the NHL. I think no surprise that Rinaldo and Marchand would be on that list.
What do you mean we're looking at where the fans, this whole thing is with the fans?
No, some of it is the players, some of it is the fans.
I'm looking at a different article than you then.
Really?
Your computer's off. It's not even on.
I sent you the exact link to the article.
All right, keep going.
Okay, fine. Thank you. According to the
back to Moose Jaw.
Yeah, seriously.
What other polls were done here?
Players, the players were asked who has made the biggest impression on you this year. Patrick Kane, the winner of that, with 22% of the vote. Connor McDavid, second, with 19%. And Dylan Larkin, third, with 11%. So, obviously, the players are impressed by Patrick Kane's recent activities this year. And no surprise, given how he's the runaway leader for the Art Ross Trophy this season.
Mm-hmm.
Your favorite Canadian NHL city to visit? Fans in Winnipeg and Calgary won't like this one, as they came in last with 3% each.
Well, I mean, Drew, look at this. Okay, so Vancouver's one, Montreal's two. I'm surprised Montreal's not one, to be honest with you. I'm surprised Montreal's not one.
Apparently the Roxy is what puts it over the top for Vancouver there.
Vancouver's one, Montreal's two, Toronto's three. I mean, we all could have guessed that one.
I know.
And then the next are 5 or 3%, Edmonton, Ottawa, Calgary, Winnipeg. I mean, I don't know. Is that surprising?
Not in my mind. Yeah. What's the worst Canadian NHL city to visit? Congratulations, Winnipeg. To no surprise, according to NHL players, it is Winnipeg at 37%, which narrowly beats out Edmonton at 34%.
Is anybody surprised by this? Does anybody care?
This is the thing I have to say about the NHLers and not liking Winnipeg. Well, first off, we have a pretty good idea of where the NHLers go every time they're in town. Like, they go to the same two places.
Yeah.
Like, do you ever hear about the NHLers frequenting like new restaurants in town that have really caught
the cutting edge of the restaurant
cuisine? Yeah. And do you ever hear them hanging out in the Exchange or in different spots in Winnipeg and trying out the cuisine. No, they go to the same bars and they walk down from the hotel. I don't need to name names here, but we have an idea of where they go. Yeah. And so it's not like they're going out in these cities.
Tyler Seguin is still late, I think.
Yeah,
it's not like they're
going out and taking it, going on the town and going on the riverboat if that still exists. You know what I mean? Like,
They're not really.
I'm not too concerned about what the NHL player thinks of Winnipeg.
They're enjoying a different side of the nightlife, let's say. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll bring in Chris Peters of CBS Sports to preview the Frozen Four. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Shortly after 7:30 in the evening, you're listening to NHL This Week. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program Chris Peters. Chris covers the NHL and college hockey for CBSSports.com. Chris, good afternoon, good evening, rather, and thanks for joining us.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Chris, the Frozen Four was decided. The four teams were decided this past weekend. It'll take place in Tampa Bay, April 7th through 9th. North Dakota, Boston College, Denver, and Quinnipiac will be the four teams competing for the championship of NCAA college hockey. How would you describe the field this year, these four teams? You know, is this a quality field of, you know, that'll be competing for NCAA glory?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is a loaded field. I think you've got a little bit of everything. You've got a ton of NHL prospects. You got some great college free agents. I think you've got some of the best goaltenders in the entire country in this thing, led by Thatcher Demko at Boston College. You know, this has got a little bit of everything. You know, you got the big name schools like a Boston College, and obviously North Dakota is a bigger name school in sport in hockey more than it is in other sports. So, but yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of everything in this group, which I really, really enjoy about it. And I think that the skill level of this particular Frozen Four is going to be off the charts. So I think it should be a very, very entertaining couple of days of hockey.
Chris, a lot of the focus over the last several weeks, several months here in Winnipeg has been Kyle Connor and his point streak with the University of Michigan and the line that he was playing on with Tyler Mott and JT Compher. But when you look at the University of North Dakota, Richie and I have both had a chance to drive down to Grand Forks this year and see the University of North Dakota play. Brock Besser and Jordan Schmaltz have had an excellent season there. Is it safe to say that that line has maybe been a little bit overlooked in NCAA hockey?
Maybe a little bit. I think, you know, the people that have followed college hockey closely had the quote-unquote CBS line. Love the branding there for that one. For me particularly, it makes it very easy to use that a lot in print on CBSSports.com. But I think, you know, there you got two first-round draft picks in Schmaltz and Besser, and then you've got probably one of the top college free agents in the country in Drake Cajula, who has been a human highlight reel this year, and as has Schmaltz and Besser. I mean, The pedigree of that line is just ridiculous. You know, Cajula over the years has had some pretty great linemates. He played a lot with Rocco Grimaldi. I think he played a little bit with Danny Christo as well before he graduated, and those guys were star players at North Dakota. And so he's constantly been surrounded by good players, but he's shown over the years how good he is himself. But, you know, Besser is a freshman. He came in and he lit it up. I mean, and he really plays well with Schmaltz. I think those two guys had instant chemistry. I know they're very close off the ice as well. You know, they didn't get it really going at the World Junior Championship this year, which is a bit of a surprise, but at North Dakota, they've been pretty much unstoppable. So I think, people are going to get a taste of the quality of player in college hockey when they watch that line play, because it looks like those guys have been playing with each other for, you know, 20 years, it seems, because they always seem to know where each other is. They've had some of the best passing plays of all season. So, definitely keep a very close eye on the CBS line.
You know, Chris, sticking with North Dakota for a second, one thing that caught my eye, of course, the players you mentioned have been quite dynamic this year, but they seem to be able to beat you in different ways. Like the second, third, and fourth lines on their squad, they're not all similar, and they bring different different strengths to the table. On the back end as well, you have puck movers, but you also have some physicality there. Is their depth maybe better than it's been in past years?
I think that their depth has been exceptional. And, usually North Dakota is a very well-structured team. Mm-hmm. But I think that of the teams that I've seen over the last few years, it's probably the most complete team that they've put out. Now, this is going to be their third straight trip to the Frozen Four. So, they've had great teams. But this one is a little different because I think, last year they had to rely a little bit mm-hmm. more on Zane McIntyre in net. He was an outstanding goalie, was the goalie of the year in college hockey. This year, they've had Cam Johnson have an even better year, which was not really expected. He's been, everybody thought he was talented, but not at the level that he's played this year. But then you talk about that D-core, and they've got Troy Stetcher, they've got mm-hmm. Gage Ausmus, who's more of that, shutdown style guy. Stetcher's kind of the two-way guy. You got Poolman, who you guys are probably familiar with, mm-hmm. who has great offensive ability. So, yeah, there are so many layers to this team. And then, we mentioned the CBS line, and, once you get past them, you got to stop Austin Pagansky and Luke Johnson. Two guys that are really heavy, hard to move. And then it just keeps going and going. And there's like a little skill guy like Shane Gersich. So I mean, there are so many layers to that team. And I mentioned this over the weekend during the regional that I thought personally that there was not a team that is even close to them in terms of, the first guy to the last guy. They're just the most complete team in this tournament. And I think that. They've been trying to get over the hump. They've been to the Frozen Four an awful lot since they won in 2000, and they're still waiting on that next championship. So I think this is going to be a really good opportunity for them to win it all.
You're listening to NHL This Week on TSN 1290. Our guest is Chris Peters, who covers the NHL and college hockey for CBSSports.com. Chris, Boston College, they're headed to their 25th Frozen Four, a tremendous accomplishment. Their best player this year, Thatcher Demko, Vancouver Canucks product, the goaltender there. Does he need to be the team's best player for them to win this tournament, or can they get by with him not performing at the .936 save percentage that he did during the regular season?
Well, I think that we saw a little bit in the regional, particularly against Minnesota Duluth, that he needs to be real good for them. And we even saw in the Hockey East tournament the week before, he didn't have a great game, and that they struggled. So I think, that they certainly are a team with depth. They have more draft picks than any team in this tournament, or at this point in the tournament. And so they certainly have the athletes to get the job done if Demko's not on his game. But he's been at such a high level all year. You pretty much kind of rely on him to be your backbone. But I love their D-core. I think that Steven Santini and Ian McCaution are, two veteran guys that are really outstanding. McCaution's a Panthers prospect and Santini's a Devils prospect. And, we talk a lot about point production and the importance of that for defensemen, particularly in today's NHL. But Steven Santini is one of those guys that is kind of the exception to the rule in the shutdown defense because he's such a brilliant skater. He plays a physical game, but he's just so smart as well. So he's not just that one-dimensional shutdown guy. He just doesn't put up a lot of points. And I think that he's a guy to watch just because he plays an NHL-style game. But then the forwards, Alex Tuch is a gigantic human being that has great scoring ability. Same with Miles Wood. They have so many different guys that can beat you, which is why I think that they don't necessarily need Demko to be exceptional. But when they're going to play a team against Quinnipiac here, where that's a team that really has so much skill, he's going to have to be sharp because that's going to be a team that could give them some problems if they're not careful and if they take it too lightly. So I think that we've got the way the semifinals set up, it's just the two perfect matchups to kind of have teams with similar styles, and then we'll see what it all happens, who gets through that to get to the national championship game. But Boston College, absolutely a star-studded team.
Chris, getting away from the Frozen Four for a second, I know that you've watched Jimmy Vesey of Harvard play quite a bit over the years. What was your take on the whole situation? And for those who aren't familiar with Jimmy Vesey, can you maybe describe him as a hockey player and how talented and what you see his upside as?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I've kind of followed Vesey off and on, over his college career. It's a little harder to see Harvard sometimes, but he is a talented player. He played the World Junior Championship in 2013 for Team USA. He played the World Championship last year for the men's team. So this is a kid that has a lot of talent. He's a brilliant goal scorer. I think that's one thing that everybody will notice right away. His goal scoring numbers are outstanding. And in terms of the whole decision to not sign with Nashville, I know that if it was me, it's easy for me to say this because I don't have anything riding on it, but you know, I personally would have signed with Nashville, but I also understand the allure of being able to pick your team. And I have very little doubt that if all 29 teams have an extra contract to spare on August 15th, the 29 other teams other than Nashville, they're going to offer him one of those contract spots, because I think that it is very rare to get an NHL ready prospect at this point that you get an entry level contract. I'm not saying that he can't miss, but he's probably won't miss. So, you know, that's kind of, that's good enough at this point to have all those teams try to get all in. So he built up a lot of strength over the last 4 years, which is really what took him to the next level. As a junior, he exploded. He scored over 30 goals in college hockey, which is not easy to do, although we just saw how easy Kyle Connor made that look this year, but really not that easy to do. And he has really good hand skills. He's got a really good skater. So I think that there's going to be a lot of interest in him. I know there's a lot of people pegging him to either be with Boston or Toronto for the obvious connections. But when you can choose any team to go to, I don't know if it's just that simple. So I guess we're going to find out pretty soon here. But I still think that what the Predators were offering him, I don't know how. It couldn't have been easy to turn down, because they said top six role, burn the first year off your entry level contract. And, you know, you're pretty much, you're in the playoffs. You're playing in the playoffs as a, you know, 22, 23-year-old kid. So this is a very interesting situation. I'm sure it wasn't an easy decision to say no to the Predators.
Chris, last question. You mentioned Kyle Connor. Of course, everybody in Winnipeg wants to know all about Kyle Connor. So what do you think happens with Connor and the Jets? And is there a player, you've probably been asked this before, is there a player that he kind of reminds you of? And for Jets fans to kind of picture when thinking about him, even though, you know, some of his games have been on TV recently?
Yeah, you know, it's tough to do the comparison thing. I've always struggled with it, because, whenever we see comparisons, typically in the media, it's something outlandish. Like, you know, we've had 14 next Steve Yzermans in the NHL draft and things like that. But, you know, just on a pure skill level and I've seen Connor play since he was in the USHL in his first year there. And the progression of his game has been one of the most impressive things to me. Every year he got better. Every year he produced more. Every year he became more difficult to contain. And then we saw what he did at Michigan this year, where he was explosive. And, you know, a lot of people have made a lot about the fact that the quality of competition in the Big Ten Conference is not great. And I'm not going to deny that. I think that's absolutely true. However, when you say that you put up 71 points as a freshman in college hockey, and you're one of two people to have put up that many points since Paul Kariya's 100 in 92-93, that's saying something. It doesn't matter what conference you play in, because there are worse conferences in the Big Ten. So I think that he is, to me, what I think will happen is I just don't see any reason for him to go back to Michigan. I think they've lost a lot of players already. Zach Werenski is already gone. Michael Downing's already gone. So two of their top defensemen gone. Good chance J.T. Compher and Tyler Mott get offered contracts and leave. We don't know if Red Berenson is coming back next year. So there are a lot of factors there. The only reason not to sign him is if, you know, Winnipeg has any doubts about what they can do next season, and do they want to waste a year, or do they want to, you know, do they want to send him to the AHL for a while. You know, there are just so many different things that can happen in that situation. But I think he's NHL ready, and I do think that they should offer him a contract, get it done. We just saw what happened with Jimmy Vesey. I don't think there's any concern about that happening with Kyle Connor, but still, you want to get that contract done. And I think he's such an exceptional player that has only gotten better each year. And I was skeptical of him a little bit in his draft season, just for a few reasons, but I didn't expect to see him fall to 17. And so what has happened over the last year has been, I expected him to be probably one of the best freshmen in the country. I don't know if I expected him to explode like he did. And I certainly didn't expect him to miss out on the World Junior Championship. It's been a really weird year for him, but an exceptional young player. And I think the Jets are going to be extremely happy to have him in a system that I think has been really well stocked through the draft.
Chris, before we let you go, we're going to put you on the spot. Who's your pick?
Okay.
To win the Frozen Four?
That's where it goes.
I said it before the tournament. I said it for a lot of the season. I think North Dakota is going to finally get over the hump with Bradbury behind the bench, and I have them winning the national championship. I have picked them before, and they've let me down, but I really think this team is, of the teams in the tournament, the most complete, and that's going to really carry them through. So a very exciting tournament. I think the games are going to be really close, and it's going to come down to the wire. But I got North Dakota.
Chris, you know Rich went to North Dakota, right?
Oh, really?
I'm partial, Chris, so hopefully they can pull it home. There have been a number of disappointments, and when I went there, this is longer than I want to admit, but the teams that they had, you know, the Taves and Zajac, there was teams there that you thought would win, so hopefully they can get over the hump here.
They used to think Richie looked like they used to mistake Richie for Zach Parise in Grand Forks.
Well, good luck to you. I think it's going to be a good year, so we'll see. Fingers crossed for you.
Chris Peters covers the NHL and college hockey for CBSSports.com. Chris, appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
All right, anytime. Thanks for having me, guys.
Take care, Chris. Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Ten minutes before the top of the hour, big thanks to Chris Peters and before him, Gord Wilson of the Ottawa Senators broadcast for joining us to talk about the Senators. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Final segment on tonight's show brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Chad Daniels in town all week at Rumors. Sold-out show tonight, so better get your tickets nice and early to see Chad Daniels all week long at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. We head to Twitter, where, of course, the geniuses reside. Our good buddy, Pacific Jets fan, poses the question with a poll: what is Richie eating on air? The two options are, one, the Illegal Curve sandwich, and two, a sandwich from some other show on the station that we not going to bring up publicly on air. So, Richie, you know, what are you eating on air?
Well, a couple things. The first thing is I picked up a coffee before the show like I usually do, but for some reason this coffee tastes like garbage. I'm not going to name the establishment, although I probably should. I won't, and you apparently got from the same place, but it tastes terrible. So I had to go.
It's quite possible I do not have as refined of a palate as you do.
Yeah. Refined something, all right. Anyhow, so Chris Curry,
producer Chris.
Not Chris Peters. Chris Curry is our great op here. He has not only done a great job tonight in general, the music's been unreal, he also provided some nice chocolate. So I need to get rid of the taste of the coffee.
Those are what, mini eggs?
They're mini eggs. Yeah, mini eggs. So I didn't realize.
Happy Easter.
Yeah. I didn't realize. Happy Easter. I didn't realize that, you know, when I threw the chocolate in my mouth, that you could hear that until you told me, Drew. So our very keen listener has a very nice, his quality ears.
Yes, he does. He's able to decipher the sound of you eating chocolate.
He couldn't hear Ezzy when Ezzy just drank the whole bowl of chocolates.
Well, Ezzy didn't actually chew. He just swallowed them whole like a duck.
Ezzy used the cough button, and he coughed all the chocolates up.
You've been actually hoarding those mini eggs the entire show. I didn't want to say anything, Rich, but you've had those mini eggs right by your side. You're not giving me or Drew any tastes.
It's okay. He put his hand right in there. I don't want any of that at that point in time. But it was very nice, Chris, to provide you with that candy.
Mini eggs are the type of thing, like, I find like mini eggs similar to like M&M's, like those the larger M&M peanuts.
Yes.
Like if you put a bowl in front of me, I will have those finished within 15 minutes. Like I have no self-control. So it's good that you're eating them. Because if
you could have just said I have no self-control. You didn't really need to clarify on what topic you were speaking about. That would have been sufficient.
If you put some pretzels in front of me, like I probably will have a couple.
It's because they're making you too thirsty.
It's true.
These pretzels are making you thirsty.
Exactly.
Ezzy, by the way, quickly before I know you want to go to the out-of-town scoreboard.
No, hang on. If we're making fun of Ezzy, I'm quite prepared to abandon the out-of-town scoreboard.
I mean, Ezzy, is your dad going to be, you know, terrible news this week about Gary Shandling? Is your dad still mad at me for not returning the Larry Sanders Show?
Did you borrow a DVD back in the day?
Well, I borrowed a VHS, actually. Yeah. And this was five, six years ago I borrowed it.
Well, did you?
Hang on. I hadn't seen the show before.
Definitely horrible news because Gary Shandling, I mean, you're talking if you're talking about Jerry Seinfeld, he'll tell you that mm-hmm. that's his idol, right?
Yeah, sure.
So horrible news, one of the greatest comedians of all time.
For sure.
Richie mentioned Larry Sanders. So yes, my dad was quite upset. This is probably, Drew, I'm going to say about 10 years ago.
Okay.
Rich likes Gary Shandling as well and the Larry Sanders Show. So when I still lived at home, Richie comes over. My dad has this brand new Gary Shandling Larry Sanders Show DVD. I still have it somewhere. There were like four seasons. Oh, that DVD's long gone. And my dad asked me, like, you know, a few months later, like, where is it? And I asked Rich and he's like, oh, you know, I haven't watched it yet. 10 years later.
No, I watch. I don't know where I put it.
10 years later, my dad is still asking me about the DVD. Where is it?
He actually asked quite recently. By the way,
now that I think about it, I lent you a copy of the Central Red Army documentary about the 1980s.
That's on my counter at home, though. I have that.
Have you watched it?
I haven't. I saw it was
so
on.
So it seems like you're hoarding the DVDs,
Rich,
but you're not watching the DVDs.
I know Rich likes his House of Cards. He watches House of Cards all the time.
Great season 5, House of Cards.
You got to start expanding your horizons a little bit and watching hockey.
Yeah, by the way, quickly, I didn't mention. This segment has gone to hell. After the show on Saturday, which you, of course, skipped because you didn't want to wake up at 6 in the morning.
Uh-huh. Moose Jaw. Like, that place really exists.
Yeah, exactly. I actually drove by your place and your car was outside. But anyhow, I went out for breakfast after the show. Guess who I see? The whole Ginsburg family. And clearly, you know, didn't tell your dad about the early show. I walk in, it's about 9:15, and he goes, Richie, what time are you on the air today? I said, John, the show already happened.
He goes,
oh, didn't know.
I'll be honest. I was in Moose Jaw on the weekend, and I did not pay attention to when you guys were on. I didn't care what you were talking about, what guests you had on. I completely checked out. I don't get weeks off very often.
I got to tell you, you have a very understanding lady friend that you went to Moose Jaw to take a tour of the arena.
That's true. Moose Jaw is in the WHL playoffs right now, but they were in Prince Albert for the first two games, which they won, and then they lost game three in Moose Jaw. But I wanted to check out the arena, so checked out the arena, got some merchandise for the family.
Like, is it just open to the public even though there's no games going on?
Yeah, there's still other teams that use it.
Oh, okay. And you just wandered through the arena.
I got a nice little tour. Beautiful arena.
Really?
Yeah.
I wanted to mention, speaking of DVDs, did you read the story in the news this week about a person who rented a VHS copy of Tom Green's classic Freddy Got Fingered from from Blockbuster earlier? Yeah.
Sorry, Drew. I don't websites that you read.
He got arrested.
What are you talking about?
He rented that movie and he got arrested for not returning the VHS copy of it 10 years later.
Arrested
and charged for theft, I guess.
That reminds me of the time, this is many years ago, that I rented a Weekend at Bernie's 2 from Star Time, and I went to return it, and Star Time just went out of business.
So you got to keep it.
Do you still have it?
Yeah, I'm actually taking part in Weekend at Bernie's 3 right now here with Drew. I kept it. I still have it.
Freddy got fingered.
Yeah. Tom Green's classic.
Where did you read that? Like, it's TMZ?
It was a news story that was going around last week because it's so ridiculous that some police resources would be used to arrest somebody for that. But Ezzy, you can probably do a citizen's arrest on behalf of your dad for the Larry Sanders Show.
Yeah, I my dad definitely wants that DVD back. Rich, you got to get that DVD back to my dad.
I don't think so.
I think that's probably the best segment we've ever done, if you ask me. Anyways,
what do we have planned there?
We were going to do the out-of-town scoreboard, talk about the playoff races, and talk about following up on Saturday's conversation about the draft lottery.
This is bad. Yeah, Gordon Miller tried to steal my idea.
And Larry Brooks had his own idea. We'll talk about it on Saturday.
Pass the mini eggs, Rich.
You can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Chris, for Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you a good night and good luck.